1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Excuse me, you wanted something a minute ago. But I've lost thread of it now. Who was it? Oh, yes. Excuse me, I'll carry the heads here. That's good enough. I think I can catch it there.
My name is Clyde Wilson. What I said before was the fact that that's what the Southern whites are trying to do now. They believe that they believe in looking into the past and holding on to these things of the past that made them at one time great. We all know the South at one time was a great industrial and economic location. If for certain reason, I mean, if certain reasons were different, this one reason that is the Southern white regards the Negro as his ancestor did in the pre-Civil War days as a means of a livelihood. He thinks of the Negro as a item of luxury. He failed to realize that the Negro is a human being, and that the Negro is a person. I mean, actually, I don't know how to state this to make you understand, what the white man is trying to do is hold the Negro at a standstill, whereas he no longer wants to identify himself with his heritage. He wants to have the Negro in a state where the Negro depends mainly or primarily upon the whites. He wants to hold the Negro back. I mean, not so much as an economical advantage, but also social.
What about the fact that some Negro writers would say that you can't have a solution in the South until there has been a change in the North? What does that mean to you? James Baldwin is one of those people, most recently, who said that.
Said we can't.
You can't change the South until you have changed the North.
Being born in the South, mainly I would know more about the South than I would about the North. And so whatever I say will mainly be right here with the South, and that is this. If we can possibly clean up our own backyard, using this phrase, then I think the North will be taken care of in the long run. In other words, what I want to say is that the North is already in a state of progress that is so much more advanced than the South that we need to look at the South now.
You know what Carl Rahman says, or said a few years ago?
What?
In print. He said that the troubles in the South will be a mere dress rehearsal for the real show in New York, Chicago, Detroit, such places. He's a thoughtful man who's very well informed. Excuse me a second now. I've got to get the order of this. Excuse me again. You haven't said anything for a long time.
Well, going along with Baldwin's theory that...
Ms. Fraser.
Yes, that's right. Going along with Baldwin's theory that, first of all, you must clean up the North in order to bring the South in line. I believe that the North, at least I know for a fact, that in the North, you have the problems. They're not quite as brought out in the North as they are in the South, because in the North, they have a way of throwing the curve, more or less, where you would go into a store and you might want to buy something. Well, this price is always set a little too high that you can't afford it. Or if, say, for instance, you wanted to go into one of the better hotels in New York, well, the price is a little too high. You can't afford it. It's not so much a slam in the face to be told that the price is, say, more than what you can afford. As it is when you come to the South and they tell you, well, we simply don't serve you. Here, you have it in the North, you feel that, well, I better go out and get another job and maybe make enough money where I can afford to go in or I can afford to buy. But I cannot change the color of my skin in the South in order to go into a store and buy something. So therefore, myself personally, I won't mind going into a store and looking at a dress and the price tag might read $500. Well, I don't have $500. But if I go into a store in the South and a dress only costs $7.50 or $17.50 and I have $17.50 in my pocket, but they tell me I cannot buy the dress, this is where the slam comes in.
That's the real difference, isn't it?
That's the difference.
What could Baldwin be talking about, or Rowan be talking about, or the others who talk that way? What could they be meaning?
My name is Robert Walker. I think what Baldwin is talking about, it dates back to the Civil War when the South was conquered by the North and the slaves were free. All right, in contemporary times, we find that in the North, the Negro is still being demonstrated against in this quest for better homes. The Negro in the North doesn't have the very best of homes, and even as far as education is concerned, in some of the northern cities. Well, in the South, this problem is coming with the Negro also. And since the South was conquered by the North during the days of the Civil War, well, it's up to, as he sees the solution, it's up to the North to get rid of all the Jim Crow habits and ideas. And then the South, you know, will go in behind, because as long as there's discrimination against the Negro in the North, well, going to be in the South.
I believe that...
Put your name on, will you please?
Lucky, William Lucky. I believe, say, when he said the North would have to clean up first, is that we must have a model of something to go by. Now, the North conquered the South in the Civil War, thereby setting the slave free. But we will find that in the North, that segregation is in a disguised fashion. Now, we must have a model in order for the South to go by. And we can't guide the people in the North, especially the whites, can't scream about what's happening down South without facing reality of what they're doing in disguise. The only difference in the two sections of the country is that the people in the South do it, and they don't care. The whites in the South do it because they don't care, while the people in the North try to disguise it. Now, that's the only way I can see.
Yes, sir.
What's
your name, Lisa?
My name is Willie Coleman.
Well, I think what Baldwin is talking about is that a Negro is a Negro wherever he is. If he's in the South or North, he's still a Negro. And then the freedom that the Negro in the South is seeking is the freedom that the Negro in the North presumes to have. I think that is generally what is being said. And what is actually the case is that there's a simulated freedom. The Negro isn't really free. And by making the Negro equal to the white in the North and then coming back to the South and doing that, it would probably be an easier job that way.
There are people active and professionally engaged in the civil rights movement in this very state who say that they will get a solution here before they get it in New York City to reverse Baldwin's and Rowan's.
I believe that a problem can be dealt with more if it's not abstract. Like in mathematics, you can deal with a pure applied problem than you can one where you have to go about certain reasoning and do. In the South, like I said, the people, the white folks here, let it be known a fact, and they cried out loud and clear that they are a stone segregationist. They don't want to even intermingle with the Negroes. As far as rights are concerned, I think that time will come when we will have the same equal rights as them, but we won't be accepted by them. But in the North, that's just about the issue. Sure, they have the same rights, but they are not accepted. And I believe that you can deal with a problem when you know the case, and everything is just given to you down pat, and you know what you got to, what you're up against, instead of going about in disguised fashion.
Now, in relation to your question about as to whether the civil rights equalization would be obtained earlier in the South or here in Mississippi than it will be in New York City. I actually believe that it will be obtained in New York City before it will be here, because of the mere fact that in New York City we have, I say, Mayor Wagner and his workers are more willing to, I say, sit down and negotiate, whereas here they neglect to, they just say, we don't want to make any terms at all if it's leading to segregation or integration.
Perhaps the problem's more difficult there.
Where, here?
There.
Oh,
perhaps.
Yes.
Sometimes they think it is.
I would think it is because of the fact that it was mentioned before that New York is supposed to be a state where the Negro is given its equal rights. And if it is publicized that the Negro is discriminated in New York, well, it's a blow to the state itself and its traditions.
Dr. Jeffs, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
My name is Thurman Beasley. In accordance to what they have said and in reference to your question, I would think that we could look at places like Racine or Chicago. New York is not as bad, but when we look at the place like Chicago, most of the people in Chicago migrated from the South. And going up there, they carried the idea, their tradition, which most people in this sector are provincialists, as we know. And in this, they migrated to the North, carried their idea of their provincial feeling, and they brought it up in their children. And it spread it over the North, this and it is over the South. So when we speak of, as Jane Baldwin said, the problem in the North in comparison with that in the South, it's really the problem in the North is not as great as that in the South, but the problems in the North are shielded or covered up, where the people in the South speak what they think. If they can stand out on the corner and say they dislike Negroes or they hate Negroes or they are stone segregationists. Where in New York, a person do that, he would not necessarily be mobbed, but he might be mobbed, because I mean they say that everybody has equal rights. Yes.
I am James Galloway.
Galloway.
G-A-L-L-A. I have one statement which is to say that the people in the South, white, they must realize that Negroes no longer wish to be provincial. They wish to strive farther, no matter what. And that in these, take for instance, our fight for the civil rights. Well, no matter what may come, well, even the leaders, not getting off the subject, even the leaders, after they may be gone, there will be some more Negroes that will stand up and fight for these rights.
Now, where do you think they're going? When they're dead, next generation, you mean? Or
I'm talking about if they are, you know what I mean, if they should die. Uh-huh. Well, okay, there's another one to take his place, you know what I mean, that is more eager to.
A conception I have of this is the Negro necessarily don't, I mean, we are fighting really for the next generation. We don't expect to be, we finished high school, we're in college. We don't expect to be able to go back to the white high school, but our children, we want them to have the best education. If you look at the average small town in not necessarily Mississippi, Tennessee, or any southern state you want to, the Negro high schools, or the separate high school that they call it, don't have half the equipment that the white high school have.
How about Washington, D.C. or New York City?
Well, you can look at those also, but you will find in certain areas, the teachers up there are pretty well up to date, where the teachers here, the schools are just now becoming A-rated schools, like the colleges in the South. Our teachers from high school didn't migrate from up north back down south to teach. The teachers that most of the teachers from my high school didn't come from an A-rated school. We are handicapped. When we try to go to college, we have to strive harder than anybody else because we were handicapped in high school, because we didn't have the proper teaching and training. And that's the only reason that, one of the reasons the Negro is fighting so hard. He don't want the next generation or his grandchildren to come up in the same environment and under the same conditions that he did.
Basic motives, isn't it? Yes. One of the basic motives on the practical side. Mm-hmm.
Do you get proper teaching in college?
Well, I haven't been
To some extent.
I have a good job.
May I answer that?
We have one more.
On this question,
if he wants to answer, let him.
Well, actually, I don't think the blame should be, the teaching should be set toward the college. I think this is, it's actually a sort of a circle, whereas the consciousness begins in the home itself. First, the fact that the parent needs, I mean, the child needs to be educated to the greatest extent must be realized by the parent.
With all the parent,
After it goes to come from the parent, she encourages the child to go to school. In his earlier years of school, she must instill within his mind to actually study and try to get as much out of it as he possibly can by getting a good foundation in high school or making the best of that which he has, even though he is in a segregated school, making the best of it.
Yes.
Building up determination to go to college. Decide what he wants to do. Work toward it. Use those facilities which he has in college, and then it comes to the responsibility of the college to make sure that that material which they turn out is material which is worthy of building up a better society in which they are going.
May I answer?
I think we have a prior claim down here.
My name is Clyde Wilson. I would like to say something regarding the instructor, and that is this, that the instructors, some of them forget that they have as much to do with the student molding his life as the parent. And what I want to say is that the teacher has the ability to do just as much for the child as the child's mother and father. The instructor must realize that he can play an important part in molding this child in the way that he wants him to go. The child spends almost as much time, perhaps he spends more under the guidance of an instructor than he does with his parents. As for myself, I know that was my case.
In other words, you would suggest that Negro teachers must be more dedicated.
Yes, they must be more dedicated.
Remember that a child's basic personality has been formed by the time he's 6 years old. And he doesn't come to school until he's 6 years old. His basic attitudes toward learning are set in the home.
Yes.
Those basic patterns.
Yes, but the instructor plays an important part in building, changing the child's trying to have change.
Just one at a time, because otherwise it all gets blurred, you see, on the recording. I should have brought that down to you then. I don't know who's first. You were holding your hand up earlier.
I would like to ask you, have you heard the other side of the question?
Which question?
About how do you feel towards the civil rights, Negro civil rights? Have you got the white students' opinion of it?
Have the white students' opinion of it?
Yes. Because they are the people that will have to accept the Negro.
I know something about them, but I haven't made a business of it. I don't have to make a business out of it. I see someone else. Oh, sure. But it differs from, place to place and person to person. I can tell you this. Well, it's a long tale and time's running short. I'd rather you talk to me. What you going to say? All right. Are you going to say something?
She stated the student, when he becomes 6 years old, when he is ready to enter elementary school, his personality is already molded. But we are not discussing the personality. We want the ability of the student to be developed to his fullest potentiality.
Personality.
I know personality is a basic fundamental, but personality, I know some, you could call classify them as geniuses with the worst personality you want to meet. And that's the parent's responsibility. We are trying to get at the idea of whether a student, a person, why is he handicapped? Why is he fighting for his rights, these equal rights or same facilities as the white student has? We're not talking about his personality or how his personality developed.
The Negro student expressed.
Excuse me, I believe first claimant. You got lost in the shuffle here a minute ago.
Well, in answer to Dr. Clark's question about the teachers, I believe that when a student enters college, he more or less has just begun to think for himself. And it is the teacher who, in voicing his opinion and discussing the opinion of others, give the student, a pattern to go by in his thinking. And therefore, he would eventually formulate ideas which he will consider his own. So therefore, if the teachers would view their ideas as well as others, and not say necessarily teach by a set pattern all through whichever class, because in high school, my sister went to a teacher, and I told her I was going to the same teacher. Well, I'll tell you what he's going to say. He says it day after day, year after year.
I know
but
myself.
If you change the ideas to meet with the needs of the student, then and say the time, and here you would more or less build more the character of the individual more than his parents, because more in general, the parents' ideas will only go so far. But the teacher has an opportunity more or less to make the individual into something greater either to lower him in either way, because a lot of kids build more respect for their teachers than they have for their parents in general, on general views.
You're going to take a responsibility for cutting us off. I mean,
all right, we'll go on to four.
To four,
yes.
All right.
I have something to say.
Please, excuse me, Richard Ruskin.
That in regard to what the teacher, the effect the teacher has upon the student when he enters the college level, well, I feel that when a student enters college, his personality and his own look of life had already been developed. I mean, everything is there set, and I believe it's really up to the individual himself. Because if the individual wants to learn, he have books and things he can read. I mean, I realize that we don't have the necessary equipment, but I still believe it is the individual himself.
My name is Robert Walker.
Do you want some back on civil
rights?
Yeah. Like
all your
mind?
Mr. Walker, sir.
Well, are you going to change the topic now?
Yeah.
He came to talk about civil rights.
Yeah. Well, this fails, all right? I don't want to guide the conversation too much.
Why don't you tell him, Mr. Walker, whom you could be if you had a choice? Would you be Wilkins, Foreman, Farmer, King, or Baynard Rustin? Which one six?
If I had the choice.
Uh-huh. Which one of those? If you had to be one, which one would you be?
Well, if I had to be one other than myself, I guess I would prefer to be Dr. King, because it goes in with the principles of Dr. King, his dynamic personality, how he's able to capture the attention of the mass and, you know, cause them to get in behind him. And being a leader, well, I would like to be a leader, and well, the cause and everything, I would like to be Dr. King.
Okay, same question down the line.
Well, I would hate to choose or patronize a certain person, but if I had my choice, it would have to be Dr. King, because, I mean, I don't feel as I'm alone in this. I've heard it stated before that if certain students said if they had a choice, they'd follow Dr. King anywhere. And they admire him, and he has inspired them that much. And I really believe that if we had just a few more leaders like Dr. King, that we wouldn't have quite as much grievance as we do now. It seemed to be our main trouble is no leaders. You cannot not do anything on his own. He must have a leader.
Well, in my opinion, I would go along with Dr. King, because he's a man that seems as if though he has some kind of supernatural power in some way. I mean, he's a leader from his heart. teachers just follow him.
I don't think that's why these people hardly know anything about Bowman.
I know something about all of them back there.
My name is Clyde Wilson. If I had the choice, I would pick James Forman. James Forman had a core, and James Forman is a man who believes in getting down to the essential facts. He believes in sending workers to places where there have been mass demonstrations, but he believes in sending representatives there to work not only on mass demonstrations for whatever the cause at that central point might happen to be, but he believes in one thing, and that is this. He believes in teaching people, educating people in the rights of civil liberties. He believes in getting to the essential fact, and that is teaching the Negro his basic right, and that is the right to vote.
I'm Otis Shearer, and I don't think a Negro should try to pick his choice in leadership, because all of these leaders that were mentioned, they are trying to obtain the same goal for the Negro, or lead the Negro to the same goal. So why choose between them?
But suppose one is right and one is wrong.
Well, we must assume that...
Assume the possibility.
That one is right and one is wrong.
Assume the possibility of disagreements that are real, or fundamental questions.
Well, it's according to which one is right and which
what
is wrong.
Techniques do you like best?
What techniques?
Would you rather go out in the streets? Would you rather go to court? Or would you rather pray? Or would you rather be
not? I'd rather pray. I am John Bain, and since I've been used to struggling for what I wanted most of my life, and I believe that you never can be equal with someone by telling them that you are equal with them, I'd rather be someone who would tell somebody that I'm superior to you, and then maybe they'd agree that we're equal instead of you being better than me. And I don't necessarily adhere to any peaceful demonstration, yet I'm not that overtly violent. But I don't believe in letting anyone slap me and sit down and taking it. And take it. So if I had to be anybody, I guess I'd be Malcolm X, but I'd rather be just John Bain.
I'm Archie Taylor, and so far as choosing one of the top Negro leaders as the one which I would rather be, I couldn't possibly do this, because I know that they are basically working for the same thing. The only difference is they have different methods about going about what they want to get. Now, the different leaders are going in directions which will lead them to what they think is the end toward which they're working. But so far as my choosing one as being one which I would rather go, I couldn't do. Now,
I'm Charles Pugh. Well, I have a problem of trying to decide as to whether I would choose Mr. Randolph or Dr. King. Whereas in Dr. King, I admire his expression of nonviolence and also of achieving the same goal as the rest of the leaders. And Mr. Randolph, I just admire him in his ability to think and plan, and also with the same purpose of being nonviolent, with the same goal as Dr. King.
I am Ruth Spates, and I will have to go along with Dr. King as a Christian. But as a human being, I would rather go along with James Forman.
Well, as far as choosing a leader, I don't feel that I'm in a position to choose one, because all I know about him is what I read. But really, the one that I would like to follow the path most would be Roy Wilkins, because I like the way he handled things on executive level. But Dr. King is more or less the speaker and captives of the audience, but his philosophy on nonviolence, well, this is okay, but I'll go with Mr. Bang. If someone hits me, I'm afraid I'm going to have to hit him back.
Is that quite the way the issue presents itself?
Well, it seems that he said that his philosophy is that through this nonviolence, if a person hits you, turn the other cheek. As I remember last summer, I think this some white man hit him, and instead of doing anything, he turned the other cheek and he hit him again, he wouldn't press charges. Now, if I had been in that same situation, if he had just hit me the first time, I wouldn't have the pressing charge because I would have got my vengeance there.
But who would have served the purpose of the emancipation of a Negro that I
had to because I said that I would just choose to be William Lucky. Just stay out of it.
My name is Willie Coleman. Well, I think the issue is using discretion among the leaders, and I have two in mind, and that is Roy Wilkins and Martin Luther King. Well, as it stands now, I only know what I read, and by asking me which one would I choose is similar to asking one of the Southern whites, who would you prefer, Governor Wallace or Governor Bonacci? And I think essentially they are at the main, both of them are seeking the same thing, that they have different tactics for doing so. Roy Wilkins is with the NAACP, and naturally he can do limited things, and Martin Luther King is with the SNCC, whatever the group is, whatever it is. And I think essentially they have the same purpose in mind, just have different tactics by going about the job.
Thank you all very much indeed. You've been awful kind to me and awful helpful to me. I'm grateful to you.
I'd like to ask you, was this an educated experience for you? Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
Your students are so prone critics.